Okay, welcome for the weekly English Vision discussion. We have our traditional appointed topic, Pasura Sutta from the Sutta Nipata. Before going to that, if you have any time beam, for the time beam questions or any interview reports or any other thing worth reporting or suggesting topics or criticism, we can take few minutes and then we are going to go to the book. Please take the mic. It is working. Mic is working. Either you can, yes.
So, according to your teaching, when you observe sati and mindfulness, you said that, of course, I am very basic and pardon me for my knowledge, and you might get annoyed sometimes for what I'm talking. But generally, I have heard about the way that mind works. And we all, as human beings, go for happiness. So the happiness is, and we are trying to keep that happiness continued. Likewise now, say if you take alcohol, if you keep on taking alcohol, you keep the happiness going on, and it comes to some stage and it falls off. And then even sex, maybe it might go for half an hour, 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, and suddenly it falls off. It doesn't continue. And there are certain hormones, they are the scientists, the present world talk about, the endorphin, serotonin, and morphine, like dopamine, like, you know, those are the hormones which excrete from your brain to keep this happiness going on. So I have a very basic knowledge about the mindfulness. So how we could relate that mindfulness with these excretion of various hormones from your brain to keep you happy? Now, I have done anapanasati, I have done sakman. It comes to a stage and it stops. Like, you know, like the same thing what happens with alcohol or maybe with sex or with other way around. Like, so can you please explain? Since I'm at the basic level, how I could get the happiness on this path to stimulate my feelings towards nirvana, like.
So to answer this question, you have to understand the happiness as a stream or happiness as a small episodes or thought moment happiness. Yeah. So you are talking about the happiness as a stream, how to continue. But in reality, it is not. These are small episodes. The Buddha says each happy thought moment is start with the happiness, continue with the happiness and end up with sorrow. Okay, the momentary happiness. So again, another moment can happen. The arising is good. Continuity is good. But when it's ending, you are deprived of. So you don't know happiness is always carried, brought up with the pregnant sorrow inside. If you see as a stream, you feel like fighting for continuity of the happiness. But it is not. It's a momentary. Each and every happiness, thought moment is end up with sorrow. Each and every unhappy thought moment start with unhappiness, continue with unhappiness, and disappearance of the unhappiness is as happy. So then the thought moment analysis and the stream-like analysis, the people wanted to make the happiness as a continuous stream rather than individual episodes. So therefore, all the thing you can see as a system approach and reductionist analysis. The religious people don't take reductionism. They take the system. And therefore we call religion. The science never takes system, it takes only reductionist. Now the science and religion now merging each other. they are thinking about relationship between the system and the reductionism. The Buddha was 2600 years ago, he coupled these two, both. So he was contented and complete system, Buddhist system, because he's talking about the system as well as the reductionism. So happiness is only one thing. Everyone is on the pursuit of happiness. Everyone is end up with suffering. You have to understand happiness, expectation of happiness itself is a suffering. Happiness, the best out of happiness is understand the mechanism of happiness, then it's everlasting. The Buddha says, oh darling, the suffering is suffering, I know. But understanding of suffering is the highest happiness in the human life. How it manifests, how it works. So happiness and the unhappiness is coupled to each other, reciprocal. Expecting happiness means expecting unhappiness. And having equal values for the happiness and unhappiness, you are better, you are somewhat mediocre. But if you are learning unhappiness, whenever it is happening, don't go in search of, then you are getting so much of booster dose of happiness by understanding the mechanism of unhappiness. So therefore, don't go in search of unhappiness, but each and every unhappy thought moment is a golden opportunity. So Sigmund Freud, if I got correctly, if you do not know how to deal with the day-to-day unsatisfactoriness, you will end up with hysteric level of trauma. So you have to be with the day-to-day unsatisfactoriness. People think, no, we are well-to-do people. Why should we accept the day-to-day unsatisfactoriness? So just keep pushing away. Ultimately, the trauma happens, hysteria happens, no way. No medicine can cure you. So the acceptance of day-to-day unsatisfactoriness is the monkhood. Yes, things are happening, whatever the origin, whatever the your background, no problem. Unsatisfaction can happen. It's bearable. Put up with that. Then you are generally with the in-between happiness and unhappiness. And the in-between unhappiness and happiness is called no pressure, no pain situation. We are more than 80% in the time with that. We consider this as boredom. We consider this as monotony. We consider this as lethargic. We consider this as no list, listless. We consider this as no address. So Buddha says, if you know no pain, no pleasure, you are in happiness. If you do not know, you are in ignorance, you are in utter unhappiness. So therefore, open yourself to the no pain, no pleasure at the medium situation. All the time you are happy. Because naturally your life is 80% in the no pain, no pleasure. Otherwise you will consider a very boring and monotonous and lethargic and sleepy and listless and no address, like you feel like outcasted like. So you go in pursuit of happiness, end up with heavy unhappiness. So in the Chula Vedala Sutta, Sister Dhammadina is giving very dramatic way, of course Buddha's teaching, and she being a lady, giving the answer is so bright. So nowadays in the sermons and others usually refer to it, how the happy, unhappy and unhappy situation, understanding that, how to tackle it, that means live a normal life, that's it. Don't go in pursuit of happiness, then you end up with unhappiness. Whatever happening, it is called in mindfulness, choiceless awareness. Be aware about without the choice, good or bad, happy or unhappy. Auspicious or unauspicious, face as it is. So it is says, evenly suspended attention to anything. So people consider you as callous, so you are not concerned about. No, you are fully understand. You are not going in search of happiness because you know it is asking for unhappy. Let the thing happen, that is called Taoism. Let the natural flow happen. So Buddha says it is happening with the four natural laws. Kammaja, Kammaniyama, Chittaniyama, Bijaniyama, Utuniyama. There are four universal laws. Some people personally fight and say it's God. Buddha depersonalized it and says it's universal laws. You are no one. to the utuniyama, the seasonal changes. Kammaniyama, the good begets good and the bad begets bad. Bijaniyama, how the trees and the seeds are changing. Dhammaniyama. So therefore you are not just become give up and all the succumb to the city, you fully alert. In that whole game you are insignificant. But when you are in an egoistic trip, you are the most important person in the place and you feel like, why don't we go for pursuit of happiness? So our parents are completely misleading us. Our leaders are completely misleading us. They have compassion, but foolish compassion. Happiness cannot stand because it is subject to changes. So you have to mix it up with unhappiness, then we are better off. And that is happening through not by meditation, just by understanding, just by your perspective, just by your changing of your thinking pattern, that you can't change unless otherwise you see another people living it with the comfort zone, then you slowly adopt into that. Otherwise, no methodology you can say change your thinking pattern. It is very, very beyond our capacity. But the Buddha has some hope. Associate good friends and live it in the medium zone and be ready to accept anything. That is your immunity, that is your maturity, that is your equilibrium, that is your riding the wave. And then it's very dramatic. Life is very, very diligent. Very vigilant. Are you have any other reports? There are no? We can go, we can ask Venerable Buddha Rakhita to withdraw the explanation. Why did you become late? I have to give you explanation.
I didn't give priority to being here on time, I suppose. Sweeping.
So much of arrogance. Okay, anyway, even you are late that we made use the time in between. I invite you to go to the book.
Coming to the last two verses in this sutta. But amongst those who live remote, who do not oppose a view with other views, what will you obtain, Pasura, from those who grasp nothing here as supreme? But now you have come brooding, devising speculative views on your mind. You have confronted one who is cleansed. Indeed, you won't be able to succeed. So here the Buddha finally starts to turn towards the ideal of a monk or of an arahant, of somebody who's free from views. And, you know, if we think about the Eightfold Noble Path, then it starts with right view and right attitude. So somebody who's going around with full of views and they meet somebody who has been practicing the Dhamma, then they're not opposed by other views. Rather, they're meeting somebody who knows things as they really are. So you can grasp nothing here as from those who grasp nothing here as supreme. So it's interesting that the Buddha describes in liberation from suffering as grasping nothing here as supreme. So this is kind of, again, referring back to this idea of conceitedness. That we are supreme, that I'm better than you, that I'm equal to you, or I'm inferior to you. Whereas the perspective of these enlightened monks is that this is different. But now you have come brooding, devising speculative views in your mind. So here again, brooding is the opposite to meditation, to and the open, expansive mind, the witness, the person or the who meets the object and knows it as it really is a very different mindset to one who has come brooding, devising speculative views. So again, we devise views when we don't see things as they really are. We make up stories. This must be it, and that must be that, and they don't see things as they really are. So you have confronted one who is cleansed. So here they're cleansed of defilements. This isn't necessarily a moral cleansing, but really a cleansed of views, and especially wrong views. And indeed, you will not be able to succeed, meaning not really able to overwrite what this person knows directly for themselves as true. So these people have gained stages of enlightenment that they will not be persuaded by other, say, religious views or practices or rites or rituals. So in this way, they're people who are on the track of, from a Buddhist perspective, right view. And when they're confronted with people who are of wrong view, then it's just like the nature for their mind. So I view it as like milk and cream, like the cream floats on top of the milk. So once you've had these insights into nature, into the way things really are, and you see the profound truth of the Buddha's teachings, then you know it for yourself that this is really true. So when somebody comes and tells you stories about other, you know, perspectives or views, then you can't persuade them that reality is other than as they know it for themselves directly. And they know that your view of reality is false, because you don't, it's just based on speculation. It's just based on brooding, as he uses this word here. So there's quite a remarkable contrast between the debater, who can win the arguments, generally speaking, meeting somebody who just knows things as they really are, to meet the wise person. And, you know, so it's a sharp contrast. And this is the culmination of this sutta.
But towards the end of the sutta, there's no any encounter with Venerable Sariputta. So you told that this is a kind of a confronting Pasura with the Sariputta, and that was the story you related.
No, Sariputta had a debate with this Pasura earlier on, and then he reported back to the Buddha about the debate, and then this was the teaching that the Buddha gave to the you know, on the account of that story. So Pasura wasn't there. He wasn't directing it towards Pasura. He was directing it towards the monks in the monastery afterwards.
That means the Pasura and Buddha, no encounter. But it's a historical event. Venerable Sariputta had an encounter with him and reported to the Buddha.
Yeah, yeah. There's some discussion about what the debate was, but it was very succinct, quite a very short sort of debate between Venerable Sariputta. Like, the Venerable Sariputta could quite quickly sieve out the ideas of Pasura and defeat him. So then when he returned to the monastery, he reported what had happened. And on that report, then the Buddha gave this teaching.
And your translated term for the brooding.
Brooding, yeah.
What is the, where you find which stanza?
Brooding. In the last one. Now you have come brooding.
Dhonin yu atatvang pavitakka magama valito siti dustigatyakma sitabin manmityayvayai vitarkarimin ahe. He was thinking, preconceived idea that I am going to win. That is what you refer as brooding. It's called pavitakka magama. Vitakka magama. He came to that idea that I am going to win. So that is the motivation for him, and Buddha says that itself is wrong.
A different translation is speculating in your mind on different philosophical views. You have come reflecting on them, but you cannot go along yoked together with one who is purified.
That's the person who do not have any that kind of a view, so you can't have a rivalry. So there is no benefit to the Pasura at last. He's utterly at lost.
Another translation is, and now you have come speculating, thinking over views in your mind. You have come into contact with a purified man. You will not be able to proceed with him.
No.
So that means this happened without the Pasura now.
Yes.
So therefore, after the encounter with the Venerable Sariputta, he is defeated and Buddha gives the sermon upon the event. The Pasura is still with the wrong side and the wrong view. Yeah. So we can say that after 4 days, we have completed the Pasura Sutta, which is from 824 to 38, 28 to 38, 10 stanzas. If there are no other remarks, we can proceed to the next one.
So the next one, having seen, sorry, this is Magandhya, the Magandhya Sutta. Having seen Tanha, Ariti and Raga, I do not have any desire for sexual intercourse. So why should I desire this, full of urine and feces? I would not wish to touch her even with my foot. If you do not wish a gem such as this, a woman desired by many rulers of men, what kind of view, behavior, observances, lifestyle, existence, and rebirth do you assert? Having decided among teachings, Magandhya, said the Blessed One, It does not occur to one, I assert this, about a view tightly grasped, but seeing into views, not grasping any of them, investigating, I saw the peace within. Indeed, Muni, you speak without grasping those judgments that have been formulated, said Magandhya. As to that matter called the peace within, how is it proclaimed by the wise? Not by view, nor by learning, nor by knowledge, Magandhya, said the Blessed One. Nor do I speak of purity through good behavior and observances, but neither without view, without learning, without knowledge, without good behavior, without observances, not in that way. But having relinquished these, not grasping any of them, peaceful, not dependent, one should not hanker for existence. If indeed it is not by view, by learning, nor by knowledge, said Magandhya, nor by good behavior and observances that one speaks of purity, nor without view, without learning, without knowledge, without good behavior and observances, nor in that way, I think this is an utterly confused teaching. Come back on purity, some fall back on purity by means of view. Asked repeatedly, with dependence on a view, Magandhya, said the Blessed One, you have become baffled over things tightly grasped, but from this you have not gained even an inkling, hence you consider it utterly confused. One who thinks himself equal, superior or inferior, one might engage in disputes because of this, not shaking amongst these three discriminations. He does not think equal superior. Why would this Brahman assert it's true, or with whom would he dispute its false, when for him there is no equal and unequal? With whom would he engage in debate? Having left home to roam without abode, in the village the Muni is intimate with none. Void of sensual pleasures, without preferences, he would not engage in contentious talk with people. When he wanders detached from things in the world, the Naga would not grasp and assert them. As a thorny staked lotus born in the water is untainted by water and mud, just so the Muni, a proponent of peace, free of greed, is untainted by sensual pleasures and the world. Because of a view or an opinion, a Veda master does not become conceited, for he does not identify with them, nor led by kamma or by what is heard. He is not drawn to any abodes. For one detached from perception, there are no knots. For one liberated by wisdom, there are no delusions. But those who have grasped perceptions and views wander in the world creating friction. So again, the Buddha is going through some basic doctrinal teachings in this kind of discussion that he's having with this Magandhya. And so it's starting out from this idea, or starting from this idea that that the highest forms of pleasure are sense pleasures, and the Buddha is quickly going to, you know, put these things aside and say that, you know, there are higher forms of happiness than these kind of coarse forms of happiness that people hold up as desirable. And he points out immediately to the flaw or to the ugly aspect of even the most beautiful, that he describes, you know, somebody that's attractive to you as full of urine and feces, and that he wouldn't even wish to touch, you know, urine and feces with his foot. So why would he wish to touch another, an attractive person? So this is seeing the asubha, it's not just simply the ugliness, but to see the unattractiveness of another person. Normally, when we look at a person, an attractive person, we see the positive features, but the Buddha sees the negative features. So when you see some model or beautiful actor, do you see that they're full of urine and feces? So this is it's a very striking way of looking at the world and creating that kind of, you know, distance. So you know, this is a kind of a form of contemplation that monks practice, so that it's one of the ways that we you know, challenge our mind when the mind becomes lustful. Like, do I see the unattractive nature of the person that I find attractive? Because when we see the attractive nature, in a way, this kind of lustful thinking is blinding us from the unattractive nature that is also just beneath the surface. That beneath the surface, one is full of urine and feces. And if you do not wish a gem such as this, a woman desired by many rulers of men, what kind of view, behavior, observances, lifestyle, existence, and rebirth do you assert? So this is a very penetrating question. That if you don't, if you're not attracted to the, shall we say, the most sought after things in the normal world, such as a beautiful person, then what are you replacing it with? What can be better than this? So we have to replace, you know, something that's good. Normally we think it's good to have a beautiful partner or wealth. Then what are we replacing that normal wealth with? What is a superior form of wealth? So it's a penetrating question. What kind of view, behavior, observances, lifestyle, existence, and rebirth do you assert? So having decided amongst teachings, the Buddha replies, it does not occur to one, I assert this, about a view tightly grasped. By seeing into views, not grasping any of them, investigating, I saw the peace within. So the Buddha realized that there wasn't, in fact, a set pattern of views, behaviors, observances, lifestyles, and existence and rebirths that would be superior, because all of them in their own way would have fault. So it didn't occur to him, I assert this, I assert this view, I assert this teaching, I assert this practicing, practice or observances. So this is seeing beyond Sotapanna. By seeing into views, not grasping any of them, investigating, I saw the peace within. So to be free from views is to find the way out of this suffering and enmeshment of views. And this is the path to peace. So maybe you can add.
No, I would add the aesthetic part of this story by referring to the background. One day the Buddha was going on a pindapat. Going there were some footprints on the dust. And Magandhya, the chief father, saw the footprint, something special. And he was searching a Superman for his wife, his daughter. Daughter is very sought after, very beautiful, kings and others are fighting, but they are very proud not to give it to the people with the worldly weaknesses. So he found the footprint is a full flat. That means he's a completely contented person. So in search, went there, and he saw the Buddha is going. And then he asked, please, 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 sir, please just wait. And went out the house, went into the house and told the wife, prepare the, your daughter, show it. I found the son-in-law, proper one. And they decorated the wife, the Magandhya, the daughter, and went and saw. We were searching about, not the kings, not the any people, but we found you as the perfect person. What do you say? Then Buddha is full of shit. I'm not touch, even ready to touch with my leg. And then Magandhya, the daughter, was so angry. She did so much of dirty things throughout the life. To the Buddha as well as for his fame. But that led to a debate or a dialogue with the parents and the Buddha. And the Magandhya the Great, the father, was full of knowledge with Veda and the Hindu and kind of thing. He was telling that this is a kind of a pleasure, the source of pleasure, sorted out by the kings and other kind of thing. But you are comparing it with the shit. So that means then what do you prefer? What is your destiny? What is your experience? Then Buddha says this is good, but that's better. Better. But even he says not good. He says there are better things, the immaterial pleasure. And the father was known, he's having knowledge about that. But she's arguing because he can see. He can't live with his wife and the daughter at home if he accepts the Buddha. So he is peddling now. Then the Buddha is telling, from the beginning I have no any desire, no any hate, no any ignorance. I know it, therefore I will not be carried out by showing this kind of thing. But I am going to tell what is the better immaterial pleasure. Then it takes the philosophical dialogue. And not only the father, mother also got the message, but the daughter was broiling, developing the hate throughout. She determined to tarnish Buddha. Ultimately, she became a queen and did a lot of dirty things. And setting up people to, after giving money to blackguard the Buddha and the disciples, wherever they are going on the arms rounds, and those who followers of the Buddha, there were some in the harem, and they were being killed by this lady because they are following the Buddha. And ultimately the king already appointed Shia as the king, queen, already killed everything as a revenge. So it's a full of stories. Magandhya's story is full. And whereby the Buddha is presenting very deep philosophy, instead of cheap things, instead of good things, why don't you select, why don't you go for better things? In that sense, the whole world is blind. Because many people don't get even good. So therefore, whenever they get a good, they grasp it. So it is blinding so much, you can't see better. Because you are bounded, trapped with your goodness. So therefore, you become a prisoner of your goodness. So your progress is completely hindered by your goodness. You can't see better. You can't see best. Because the hard-earned goodness make obsession in your life. And you can see people within one life, they earn the fame, gain and kind of thing. Ultimately, they become a trap. They can't give it up. So therefore, they can't see something better. So to see a beautiful girl or a boy and see through the skin and go just piercing and see inside the flesh, inside the blood vessels, sinuses, bones, shit and everything, they are doing a gloss over. They do the beautification only at the epidermis level. So therefore, whenever you are going to contemplate of the repulsivity of the body, the five things the Buddha says, kesa, loma, naka, danta, tacho. Kesa is the hairstyles. lower mind is the other body hair, nakha, the nails, danta, and skin. These are the five things the beautification industry is specializing. So whenever someone sees, the Buddha says, out of 32 repulsive things, these five, kesa, loma, naka, danta, tacho. Those who can't beyond it, they see as a beautiful girl or beautiful woman, boy or whatever may be, they get attracted because of the gloss over of the beautification. So today the dirtiest business on the earth is pharmaceutical and the beautification. And they are making so much of changing of the governments and everything. And ultimately, they are the policymakers to the world. So they are going to attract the younger generation. And this is a big business. Elderly people also now under this younger generation because they are policymakers. And the pharmaceutical industry is managing such a thing. And with the COVID, some things came out. How dirty they are. How much they are making money? Maybe I am biased, and that is the way from the life, from the right, from the beginning. I thought my beauty is my own one, what I am eating, not by the beautification. And I never gone for bodybuilding or muscle making, nothing. So I had my desire for the girls, but it was fair enough. I can still be a registered unbachelor, a bachelor. I am a registered bachelor. So I had a lot of relationship and connection with the girls, but up to a certain level. Not that I hate them. Not that I am not concerned about my body health. I am concerned. But I know this is not the prime thing. Important thing is how will you look at through the skin, through the hairstyles, through the beautification, then inside shit. It's nothing. So therefore, in the advertisement, specifically in Sri Lanka, they developed about 20 years ago to look at the cigarette advertisements, look at the alcohol advertisement and see the trap, how they fix it. Cigarettes, boys are smoking, they is not important. They will see the girl is smoking. And if you wish to have a girl, have a cigarette. So ultimately, they train. The army people and others, you see the advertisement. Soon you see the advertisement. If you can see the trap, then you can understand. And it's been successful in Sri Lanka before the civil war. Before winning the civil war, there was a drastic reduction. I don't think they are enlightened. I am telling it's due to the kind of a teaching. So what they are looking at is, look at this advertisement and see the set trap there. So I'm hoping to make mindful games whenever you see something artificial, to see the trap, to see how the mind is crafty to make you get trapped, carried away by the trip, rather than natural things. Nature is so beautiful, no artificial nothing. It's beautiful. So the Buddha says the forest. I have never seen such a system as a forest. It's such a beautiful thing. And the animal kingdom, such a beautiful thing. But if you take a young girl or a boy, so much of beautification, ultimately end up with so much of ugly, and they are killing their nature. So therefore, you must know how to see through, how to see through kesa loma naka danta tacho. It is not repulsivity, just see through. And then you can see inside what it is available. And if you cut open, after the cinema, the one of the beauty girl, and after death, the Buddha asked, don't let the carcass to be massacred by other animal, just let it be there. Then he went there and asked people, now yesterday, before the death, 190,000 the golden, this thing, and I am going to auction this 1,000. No one is bidding. 500? 250? He says, why don't you take free of charge? Now people can see after the death that beautification and attraction is not there. And there was one monk, he was lousy and he was completely caught up with fever, just like corona. His disease also disappeared. After the oxygen in the carcass. So that is after the death. Oh, you still you can see through the all the beauties. And I have the one copy of the book calling Civilization, published by British Broadcasting Corporation, BBC. The civilization start with the cuneiform letters writing. The end of the civilization is Bridget Bardot sitting on the luxury car and having the winter clothes beautifully, and that's the end of the civilization. That's what America is going to teach us. And lucky enough, I found a quotation from the Buddha, the Sanghita Nikaya, Devata Sanghita, what are the beautiful things on the earth? What is the most precious thing? Buddha says the woman. It's a bandang. It's a kind of a material. It's a kind of a commodity. Bandamuttamang, itti bandamuttamang. Lady, the beautiful girl, is the most important thing in the... It's called a gem. So then I can understand why the BBC people telling Bridget Bardot is the height of the civilization. So how a monk is looking at it, how the politicians is looking at it, how the other the sexiest people looking at it, is what you call the entertainment today. They are not news. So Magandhya case is very important. On the spot, father and mother got enlightened, and Magandhya became such an enemy, not only to the Buddha, even to his dispensation. With Buddha, take the philosophy side. Don't consider the Magandhya's hate. And she was broiling. Father and mother got enlightened. She became the queen and did the damage. Even before the Pasura Sutta, Pasura got nothing. He just got defeated. And no benefits. Usually after the encounter with the Buddha, good or bad, he is giving kind of a teaching. It's giving kind of a message. Not only conquering the other fellow, giving something. But in this case, Magandhya got nothing. At the last sutta, Pasura got nothing. Ultimately, Buddha is reporting that to the monks, telling he is a debater, defeated, because he having something preconceived idea and his arrogance and going on, but I am not arguing with anyone. So there is no clap in one hand, if there is no other one. So therefore he lost. But he himself, Pasura, is the debater, got nothing. Magandhya in this sutta also got nothing but mother and father. Because he is so philosophical. Magandhya was a young girl and she can't understand. She got negative feeling, and the father and mother was fairly mature, and they argued and last they got the correct message, and bipolar. One part go to the death extreme, this part go to the death extreme. So therefore again and again the last sutta, the last stanza, Sanya virattasa nasanti ganta, panya vimuttasa nasanti moha, ye sanyancha dittincha ye aggahesun, te gatta yanta vicharanti loke. If you got the perception correct, no debate, no argumenting. Sanya virattasa nasanti ganta, panya vimuttasa nasanti moha. If you have the understanding with wisdom, there's no ignorance. Those who have no perception corrected, no wisdom, they are always fighting and debating with the world. And always they expect the world to react. That is what the news media means. That is what the media means. But I don't care, because I am beyond sanya, I am beyond ignorance. So no one can argue with me, no one provoke me to debates. By doing nothing, I am the winner. So these 2-3 stanzas heavily quoted in Venerable Jnanananda's Nivine Nivime sermon and very philosophical. But Magandhya became enemy. the way the argument happening, she can't understand. Parents can understand. So this is what I gathered by quick reading of the sutta, but we can go stanza one by one. I invite Venerable to give detail this thing, detail attention.
I can expand a little bit on what happened previously with the Pasura Sutta. After the Venerable Sariputta had defeated Pasura, then Pasura decided that he would become a monk himself and go to Sawati to ordain under the Venerable Sariputta, saying, "This monk is a great debater. I will go forth under him and learn the art of debate." But when he was when he got to the monastery at Jeta's Grove, he saw a different monk, Laludaya, who was a Daya. Yeah, he was a great, very attractive-looking monk, a golden body, graceful in body movements and gestures. So Pasuras thought that this bhikkhu is one of great wisdom, a great debater, and that he would take ordination under that monk instead. And then he beat that monk in debate. So still clad in his robes, he departed from the Jeta's Grove for the center of the sectarians, where he announced, "I will debate the ascetic Gotama." And he went to Jeta's Grove, accompanied by a great number of these ascetics. And thus I will beat the Venerable Gotama, he said. But the deity, it says here that the deity in the tower at the entrance of Jeta's Grove, thinking that this person is not enlightened, bound his mouth shut. And having approached the Blessed One, Pasura sat there mute, not able to speak. So people looked at him thinking, now what question will he ask? And he couldn't speak. So then they all started shouting at him, "Speak up, Pasura, speak up." And then the Blessed One said, "What can Pasura say?" And that's when he spoke this discourse. So, but it's not mentioned whether he was enlightened or not, or made any progress, not in this translation I have. So yeah, okay. Back to this earlier sutta that we were discussing.
Just still, the Pasura is in the disadvantageous side. He gained nothing, even after becoming a monk, and after he sorted Venerable Laludaya instead of Venerable Sariputta, and then ultimately he found Laludaya is just a showpiece. There were three Udayas: Mahaudai, Laludaya, and Udai. Laludaya is a very attractive person, make the monastery very clean and attracting ladies and all the time. Whenever they come, he gain some kind of thrills and frills. Mahaudai is a minister, became ordained, he's a very fat. And there's another Udai, he was a very genuine monk. So there are a lot of Udais, became a cause for imposing rules in the monastic code. Laludaya is a notorious case. He always live in the Dhanasala, let the people come and start giving sermons, living in a very big seat and very beautiful. He know how to make horticulture, how to interior arrangements. So people, when they come, he gets some other kind of thrills and frills by ladies. So the Pasura easily debate him and win over. And again he go and says, "I know, I have been a monk under the Gotama, the Siddhartha Gotama, but they are useless fellows, they are shallow fellows." And again he come to the Buddha. And there's no debate, but he's spellbound by a deity. And then still Pasura get nothing, but the Buddha gave the sermon to the monks. He come to the world always with the debate, the mind, and if someone is not debating, how can a clap of a single hand happen? I already in the past, I gone beyond debate, I am not debating. But here also, Mahagandhiya utter, the daughter utters no single word. Only the parents are presenting her. Ultimately, Buddha said, "It's a shit." And she was boiling, 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 boiling. And whole her life, committed crimes because of this the hate, because of that finding fault with the, I mean, the underestimation at the beginning of other people, she can't bear it up. So it is talking about the really well-organized and well-disciplined the mind with the no kilesas, no defilements, and the other part is full of kilesas. So very difficult to see the medium level. Talking highly the philosophical parts. And the other side, the girl is thinking about the love and the affection and sex and kind of thing. The no in-between part. So therefore, these things come under the Sutta Nipata, usually considered the philosophical suttas. Sudhamtu, why don't you take the first stanza?
Okay. Having seen Tanha, Arati, and Raga, so these are the three daughters of Mara. So they're also like desire, and like what we fail to see is that it is our attachment that ties us to the rounds of rebirth and to death. And I did not have any desire for sexual intercourse. So when the Buddha saw the daughters of Mara,
They are superhuman. They are deities.
Deities, yeah. Mara is a senior. Like he's a very unusual deity in one of the very high realms. So his three daughters are also, from this higher realm. So we normally think of the heavenly realms as a good place, but actually Mara is also born into this realm himself. And with his daughters and so forth, his retinue. So the Buddha is speaking here about like having seen the danger in what was a beautiful or attractive, then he rejected, such beautiful beings. And sometimes people think of if they see Western monks or something like that in the West, they might think, oh, we're some sort of like we've fallen on hard times or something like that, that we're misfortunate. But many monks have given up great fortune in becoming monks. I know some monks who are from families of tremendous wealth, and they had great opportunities for the pursuit of wealth and happiness in the ordinary sense of the word. I remember one monk telling me about like his holidays. He would go to St. Barth's, which is kind of like an island in the Bermudas, like in the Bahamas, and he had a private sailing boat and other such things. And there was another monk I knew, and he used to go skiing in Gstaad in Switzerland, in the winter time, and he would go to private schools and all this kind of thing, and all this sort of glamour. So, people assume that, in a way, because the monk's life is very poor, that we must be wretched, but it's not necessarily the case. Some of the monks can have like quite tremendous parami with regards to their wealth. I also knew of a monk in Burma. His father had been a tycoon, and when he died, he left that monk like a very, very rich kind of company. And so he was again very wealthy in background. So it can be very, we can be dazzled by the superficial, by the skin level of things. And the Buddha was one who saw past the beauty of the skin and into the underlining, fasces, and urine. So this takes insight, and it's very, very important to see past that superficial nature, to see past, the external beauty, and seek for the ultimate release from suffering. So the Buddha replies, if you do not wish a gem such as Magandhya says about his own daughter, if you do not wish a gem such as this, a woman desired by many rulers of men, what kind of view, behavior, observance, lifestyle, existence, and rebirth do you assert? So again, his daughter was very, very beautiful. She's described as having a golden hue, a golden complexion, a golden skin. And, you know, this is mentioned many times in the suttas, these people of golden hue as being the most attractive that the Buddha mentions. And so what had attracted Mahagandhya to the Buddha actually was that he had seen him going out on alms, and that the Buddha too had a golden hue like his own daughter. So he had thought that this would be matching quality, yeah, for his daughter. So that's why he first approached, and then as they approached, his wife saw these elements of like the footprints, that the Buddha didn't leave a footprint in a way that indicated anger, or that he hadn't sensual pleasures, but he was free from these sensual pleasures. So again, in the Burmese tradition, with regards to walking meditation, like how you walk is taken as an indication of how you've overcome the defilements. And this in particular mentioning about how you can see the mark of anger in the footprint of somebody. And so the wife was more wise. She could recognize very quickly from just looking at the footprints left by the Buddha where he was staying in the forest, that he was a person who had overcome defilements and would not be interested in marrying their daughter. So when this discussion between the Buddha and Mahagandhya had begun, there had been a prior discussion between Mahagandhya and the wife, where the wife said that this guy is not going to marry our daughter. So I don't think it was a complete surprise to Mahagandhya when he heard from the Buddha that she wasn't interested in his daughter. However, the daughter was not not prepared. So it was and that's the interesting thing to take as well from this is that you know, somebody who is beautiful and has these qualities can be very enamored with themselves. So self-enamory, the word in English is to be enamored with oneself. Enamored is to like oneself in an egotistical way, or in a blinding way, where one doesn't see one's own, shall we say, fasces and urine, or that one doesn't see the downside. And instead they have a kind of a vain view of themselves, that I'm beautiful or I'm more attractive. You know, this you can see sometimes in people who are very attractive, that they become very haughty about their sort of qualities of beauty, and it can be very ugly to see. And, you know, very arrogant and very unpleasant kind of quality. And you know, you can imagine that that this was the disposition that she took, and was very ugly. In fact, her nature, her underlying character and disposition had been revealed, and as a result, was even more unpleasant than just simply that she was full of urine and so on. So when we see through to the character, the underlying character of somebody, that they have no inner beauty, or that they have very shallow qualities and characteristics, then this is another mark that we can that can help us to overcome any lust or attractiveness towards somebody. And it's interesting that when we see the fault in something, normally we feel angry. Anger doesn't like the fault in something, but wisdom sees the fault and sees through it and has insight and wisdom based on that fault. So when we see things as they really are with wisdom, we actually see the fault and penetrate to the essence of that object that we're seeing. Whereas anger doesn't penetrate to the essence of the object, because it sees the fault and it scatters off of that object. So in this way, the Buddha was seeing the fault in Mahagandhya's daughter, but he wasn't angry with her, whereas she was seeing the fault and she was very, very angry, and this blackened her for the rest of her existence. So, you know, and it's the character that matters in the end to us.
When the Cleopatra suggested, I think, the British Prime Minister have a marriage and have a nice boy.
Roman. Cleopatra's a long time ago.
Cleopatra and who, the other party?
Mark Antony, wasn't it?
You know the story? So Cleopatra is a beauty queen and he's living a full portion kind of thing. And she wanted to have the one another king to have a sex and have a boy, have beauty and the knowledge. And the king was full of knowledge. And she made a proposal. Then the king says, okay, beautiful idea, but your foolishness and my ugliness get together and have a child, what will happen? And Cleopatra was so upset. Your foolishness and my ugliness also can join, and if it is going to go to the child, what will happen? Your beauty and my wisdom come together, it's okay. But I don't know, I am presenting the idea, you can get it. And present day, it's a very common, rich people, educated people get together and children become autistic. Children become disabled. It's a very connected feature. So therefore, Achan Brahm says, just marry an ugly girl. Then you can have a married life. And if you are searching for the rich people, finding the rich people, and marrying, all the time, the marriage is unsuccessful and many children are disabled. They are with autistic. So that is a very good sign for this technology and high superhuman beings. They are not human. Their products are not fit into the on the earth. That may be the film I saw while I'm one day traveling, a Big Bang. A computer engineer married to another computer engineering girl, and they decide not to have children. But one day she conceives. That day the father went mad, and the child is completely abnormal. So it's very common in the rich societies. And they find ways and means, but the percentage is increasing, as I understand, as I see news. So that indicates the nature likes the mediocre people, not the very rich, very beautiful, and thing. Let the nature mix in the normal people, rather than the filtering system through the technology and kind of thing, is not very healthy. It is not very... Their outcomes are not so lasting. So living in a forest and have so much of oxygen and kind of thing, our thinking and the living in the housing scheme, just like a battery system, and their mentality towards the corona, towards other tension, towards other joblessness, any kind of completely two different things. So when we are doing research, they never consider these things. They do research in America. But we are reading the research while living in the forest. So we have to understand their research is hardly applicable to Sri Lankan situation. But they are the one publishing only in the Wall Street magazines. They never publish Sri Lankan articles in the Wall Street magazine. They never give Nobel Prizes to the Asiatic people, hardly for the Rabindranath Tagore and kind of thing. They are promoting in a sense their way, their values, their these things. So we have to understand with that perspective. And the ultimately nature will judge, not you and me, not by the media, not by the popularity. They are set criteria and they are wrong. They are artificial. So I am a bumpkin coming from the village. I read everything. But I don't take them. I say, yes, it's good for you. But I am from here, and I know the entertaining part of your research paper. It's utter bullshit. All the research papers, 6 months' time, it has been disproved. Any research paper, science is disproving itself. It's a dynamic thing. Good, but when it is presenting, we feel like coming from heaven. So therefore, too good is too bad. Keep it at a distance. Go for a medium type, mediocre type,
Therefore, some people say is born into the middle class economy is very lucky. Not the high class or very low class. If you're low class, we can't sit here and kind of discussion because we have to earn something. If you're high class, these things are useless because they have other problems. But we are born in the middle class. Buddha was, of course, in the king's family. But it is also fabrication because he's not a big king. It's a provincial king. A well-to-do family. But not necessarily. You must be in the middle class. And then access to the high class and low class in literal way and not carried away, not to have fix, not to have objectives to become very high rich people or very bad people. The middle class is very good. America, what do you think? To be a 1% or you'll be into the untouchables or into a slums?
So when you say the rich people marrying rich people, I guess what comes to mind is that children of a rich family have no friction and no kind of real not getting tested or in that way they become sort of
chicken dull broiler chickens
but you said autistic kind of quality for those higher
mentally imbalance. They can't cope up with the normal day-to-day unsatisfactoriness. But they think it is not none of our business because we are well-to-do. Why should we suffer? So they are not putting up their immunity. They expect the doctor to come and the lawyer to come and the opinion given and everything must take. I don't care. They are ready to sue them and go for lawsuits. If I am sick, it's a doctor's mistake. But nonsense. Person living in the forest alone, no such consultants.
So it's good, all the frictions that we get, are we're learning and becoming intelligent.
That is called day-to-day unsatisfactoriness. That is our wealth. We must live with the day-to-day unsatisfactoriness. Otherwise, we will end up with hysteric level of trauma because we are expecting everything from other people to come and sort it out. I am just become a burden to the world. We are not living. We become a burden to others, consultants. Everyone must go, everything outsource.
I'm not sure. Both of the monks I know that were from extremely wealthy families are both extremely austere. one of them lives really in this very
that means they are mad.
Duff jungle.
They don't know how to use the
wealth. They might be.
They are doing completely austere thing. But we will not go to that austerity because we are happy with luxury. We have never been, so we have no negative to the luxury. We are born with luxury, we are not. So I am not telling that having the craziness to the luxury is a good thing. But we make some dopamine hormones by luxury, then and there. So we are not austere. I am not. Many forest monks are austere. I don't like it. It's artificial. It's a reaction. I'm telling that you must live with whatever come along your way, rather than this is good or this is bad. But it is decided by your upbringing. You are living in such a thing, either you will be attracted to the luxury or you hate it. Both are wrong. You must understand the external, but internal you have immaterial pressure. Okay, now it's time up, good topic to the next day to start. We are coming from different parts of the earth. So we may have our own experience. Thank you very much for the participation today for the English medium discussion.